Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The South Dakota legislature met in special session on Monday and gave spending power of the Federal CARES Act money to Governor Kristi Noem. The money has to be spent by December 30th. What's the governor's plan? President Trump's short stay at Walter Reed Hospital has added to the debate of wearing masks during the pandemic. Meanwhile, some say he was released too early and is jeopardizing his own recovery. It's a good time to make room for the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us by phone from Madison, we have John Hunter. He's publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Hi, John. Welcome.
Hi, Lori. Thanks.
Also with us, John Schaff is in the Tom and Danielle Ammon Foundation studio in Aberdeen. He's a professor of political science at Northern State. Welcome back, John.
Thanks for having me here.
I want to start with some of the national response to the legislative special session. Governor Noem was able to give, opening remarks, and she talked about compliments from a prominent national reporter about pandemic shutdowns being useless, and of course that garnered some attention nationwide. And John Schaff, tell us, let's start things off a little bit with, at a time when the cases are rising in South Dakota, continue to be, our highest hospitalization rate, for example, this moment that the governor chooses to say what, and how is it responded, and what's the response to it?
Well, the speech that the governor gave at that special session, it was interesting in that it struck me as being less about the special session and more, as she's wont to do, I think, defending herself and her record, and even to the point where this morning President Trump retweeted a video, a portion, the portion that you're referring to, Lori, where the governor defended her refusal to go into a lockdown. And I think the governor is really trying to portray herself as someone who has kind of withstood criticism and withstood pressure from outside sources and is sticking to her guns. And it's a matter of people can assess for themselves whether she deserves praise or criticism for that. Of course, what we're going through right now, as you say, is we're seeing an increase in cases, on a national level. The South Dakota's cases per million, we keep kind of going up, 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 up. But on the other hand, I think probably the governor would point out that our hospital capacity is still fine. Actually, our deaths per confirmed cases were about fourth from the bottom. So we have, you might say, the fourth best result in the nation. That our overall deaths per population were in about the bottom third of that. It's just a little bit below the midpoint. So there's evidence in both cases. Then it's a question of, to what extent are lockdowns successful or not successful in various states? And there again, the data is very mixed on that.
We have 273 hospitalized today, 609 total new cases. Now I'm looking at the COVID-19 report from the state, and it says 562 confirmed and 47 new probable cases. That's new to me. It looks like they've refreshed how they do this. So I will have to let the reporters are working on that right now. But 609 new cases, according to the website, 273 hospitalized, and 258 people have died now. And John Hunter, help us to think about, because I've heard more than once people say, it's too soon to declare victory. So standing up and saying we did the right thing when these numbers are still climbing, is that a declaration of victory? Should she be cautious about saying that politically? Or is it not really declaring victory at all? It's something else entirely. Like, how do you sort of see that?
Well, I've thought about it a lot, Lori, those exact things. And when the governor first said, and it was a number of weeks ago, where she basically said that, and I called it taking a victory lap, saying, we did it right. We trusted South Dakotans. And I think many of us do appreciate the fact that they didn't have kind of lockdowns, indiscriminately. But everything kind of gets a little confused with an election in front of us. And so you go, I think you've almost got two camps. You got the kind of the governing camp, and you've got the campaign groups, and with Governor Noem campaigning for President Trump, I think those messages tend to blend a little bit. So I think the message that she is telling she told South Dakotans or told legislators yesterday was not far from what the presidential campaign thing is. It's not that bad, or let's call it, you know, lockdowns don't work. And actually, the numbers you just read, Lori, and I've kept track of these every day since it started in March. My numbers actually are higher than that for today. The total confirmed cases for today versus total confirmed yesterday is about 1,000 difference.
Wow.
So they are very high, and I think it's okay to say, hey, we did the right thing, but I think you can't deny that it may not have been right, that we do have a lot of cases. And Governor Noem has always said, you know, hospitalizations and those, that's what she's, the metric she's focused on most. But I think many South Dakotans would love to see some rate of infection lower, unless we're trying for the herd immunity thing. And I know you've talked about that on your program earlier, but, you know, it's just a large number. And I think the messages are getting a little confused because of campaigns.
Yeah. Well, John Schaff, political science professor, here's my question for you. You know, we had earlier on this program this results of a new survey talking about, you know, 1 in 4 rural households have been unable to access medical care during the pandemic. How many of them are out of work, don't have health insurance, really struggling to get, you know, emergency care, to get a COVID test, to get. So my question is, we are in a campaign season, but at what point, when the message that you hear from leaders is so inconsistent with the life that you're living, does that impact somebody politically?
Well, I don't know. I think that from the beginning, what we face with this is that it's, you know, it's difficult to say what the right thing to do is, because every policy that you can suggest has costs. And so even when you're talking about problems in rural America, I was just, you know, reading something today about, you know, what is the cost of lockdowns? It is when people are afraid to go to the doctor because they're afraid to leave their houses. They're told not to leave their houses. So there's expectations that we're going to see a rise in polio and tuberculosis as people aren't bringing their kids in to get vaccinated. Even listening to a discussion by the Stanford the medical school at Stanford University, Jay Bhattacharya, talking about that we can anticipate perhaps millions of people in the world starving to death because of economic decline. There are hundreds of millions of people in the world who live close to subsistence, and massive economic decline might shove those people on the wrong side of subsistence, as well as the well-documented mental health costs. Of, you know, 25%, this is from Aaron Kittery of the UC Irvine Medical School. He's a psychiatrist there. He reports that 25% of people in the ages 18 to 25 have reported strongly contemplating suicide since the beginning of COVID. These are terrible outcomes. And yet the outcome of you know, other outcomes are more obvious of the spread of COVID, what we're seeing in our state. And I think political leaders have struggled, and where our political leaders have struggled, and I think especially on the national level, is it is so obviously political. And I think that people have a hard time trying to figure out what are they saying because they're practicing a little bit of CYA of trying to cover their rear ends and trying to make themselves look good, and what is actual good information that we can use to make the right decisions about our lives. And I think especially on the national level, and I'm thinking specifically about the president, I must say, if not exactly cover themselves in glory as they try to find themselves on every side of the issue. So they, you know, they can always say, I took this position because they took every position. And it's all about posturing as opposed to what information that people need to know to make good decisions about their lives.
Right. And that's when we get to certain things like Governor Noem saying, you know, she has no intention of getting another COVID test, or the president leaving Walter Reed Hospital. So let's talk about some of those decisions that, you know, from, and it could be the opposite. It could be if Joe Biden was president, it could be, you know, what are the consequences of him wearing a mask, or even on the campaign trail, what are the consequences of the decisions? You know, I'm not trying to assess right or wrong. I'm trying to assess what are the political consequences. You know, how do people vote according to what they see? What makes them go to the polls, stay home from the polls? That's kind of where. So, John Hunter, this whole, you know, notion of the president having the virus and then, you know, taking in the motorcade to wave for his, you know, to wave to his supporters, coming back to the White House, taking off the mask, saying, don't let this disease dominate your life. I feel better than I did, you know, 20 years ago. That is a strong political message to the country. What do you think the impact of that could be just 30 days ahead of an election?
It is, and there's several points there, Laurie. Yes, it is a political message, but there's also some non-political message there too, and that is, if you're president of the United States in any season, you want to exhibit strength. And every president who has had an illness or whatever is going to wave from a balcony at Walter Reed. You know, President Reagan, after he was shot, you know, yeah, as quickly as he could, wanted to wave out the window, like, "Yep, everything's okay," and that, you know, you want your allies and even your enemies to know that you're strong. So there is a non-political portion of that as well. But clearly, President Trump, as some of his words, I mean, aside from, you know, walking up and getting dressed in a suit and tie and so forth, looking as strong as he could to show strength, he also had kind of the political message, which, you know, this isn't, you know, I feel better than I have ever, which is probably due to extraordinary health care that he received at Walter Reed, I would guess, is among the best in the world. I would guess he would probably feel better than many patients. But what I think, long answer to a short question, Laurie, is what are the political kind of things of this? And I think that it probably strengthens the people who already liked the president and probably strengthens the people who already didn't like the president. I don't see any votes swinging one way or the other because of this. So yeah, people who loved the president before loves him even more, and the people who didn't like him before don't like him even more. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I don't think it would move any polls, much at least, that kind of action and words.
Right. Yeah, I saw a video clip of Joe Biden on the campaign trail, and Dr. Jill Biden comes up behind him and sort of nudges him back a couple steps from the reporters he's talking to, as sort of this gentle reminder, you know, to keep a little distance. And, you know, half the people are like, hey, you need someone who loves you, like Joe Biden loves Joe Biden. And the other half of people were like, he's so weak, he needs his wife to come, you know, give him a little scoot. So, John Schaaf, I mean, it just goes to show, like, the eye is in the beholder, whether you think that is an act of self-care or care and affection between two people who love each other, or whether you think that is a sign of weakness. It seems like John Hunter is speaking the truth there, that it sort of depends on what you already thought before you saw the clip.
Yeah, and this is, you know, of course, from the beginning, this has been the problem, as I was saying, is that something that, you know, I guess things are inevitably going to be politicized because we're dealing with something that is a public health question that's political. Yeah. And there has to be a public policy response to it that's going to be political. But the ease in which we slip into our well-practiced roles is somewhat depressing. And who knows, maybe after the election, maybe there can be some return to sanity, although I know I'm skeptical, but I guess a boy can dream.
Let's talk a little bit about this special session, because, as you know, in spite of the governor saying how well we have done economically, there's $1 billion of federal money, you know, coming in this CARES Act, ready to be spent. Certainly we have needed help in our economy through the payroll protection program and unemployment, enhancements as well. How did this special session kind of unfold? What happens next, and how much authority does the governor have then to basically write the checks or see that money that they have appropriated goes where they wanted it to go? John Schaaf, why don't you begin with that one?
Yeah, well, it's somewhat daunting. Many of us dream of having, it's kind of like Brewster's Millions, if you remember that old movie. You've got this many days, you've got a month. I think Brewster had to spend $20 million. We've got $1.2 billion. We got to get spent by the end of December. And I guess the legislature appropriated, had to do some appropriations for about $600 million of that. And I think that's, the concern is you know, the special session in some ways was pro forma and was not very controversial because we just needed a legislative stamp of approval to do what we knew, some of which had already been done. Some of that money has already been spent, and then we've got to spend the rest of it. But when the governor says it's not like planned for or under contract, but actually honest to goodness spent by the end of December, and the way to how the executive branch is going to do that, because they've been given not completely carte blanche, but it's carte off white, whatever that would be in French. It's close. Carte beige. score one for Hunter. How you do that responsibly. And I was thinking of when we did the American Recovery Act in 2009, or the big stimulus early in the Obama administration to deal with that economic crisis. And there were screw-ups. I don't want to go into detail, but think of when we were, you know, AIG executives getting their big bonuses with right. government money. And it's because you had to do something, you had to do it fast. And so things slip in there. And you wonder if the executive branch is going to be able to appropriately spend this money by the end of December. And I think we probably can anticipate, through no fault of anybody's own, that when you try to spend that much money that fast, something's going to be mislaid or spent on something that is inappropriate or silly. Not necessarily illegal, but we go, why did we spend money on that? Because you just can't account for everything that quickly.
Yeah. John Hunter, has there been a governor who has had to spend this amount of... I mean, it's got to be such a strange thing for anybody in South Dakota state government, which prides itself on its small government and on not spending money, to all of a sudden say, the need is great. Let's not sugarcoat that. And here is a great financial boost, but you have to make sure it gets where it needs to go as much as possible. It's a huge challenge.
It is, and I love John's analogy of Brewster's Millions. He's like, and it's a tremendous amount of money, $1.25 billion, and South Dakota in a lot of ways is going to benefit from this much more than other states are. First of all, there was a minimum, it's kind of based on population, except for this minimum. So small population states got more than their share already. And with South Dakota's economy doing better than many in this kind of thing, that our needs may not have been as great. So, and I'll really take a positive tone with this, that I think the places it's been spent so far have been very good. Replenishing the unemployment trust fund, I think it was a great
smart
move. Remember that, John referred to 2009. That was really depleted, and it took South Dakota employers a long time to have surcharges to rebuild that, to give money to K-12 and higher education schools for their things. Law enforcement, there's going to be a business grant program to help small businesses. There's all sorts of things that are going to benefit South Dakota from this.
Yeah.
They might be tweaking around the edges, but again, you're rounding with tens of millions of dollars. Well, let's spend $100 million here. Well, what about $120 million? And so we're not used to that at all. But it does seem, and again, as the governor stated, it's not just like, well, we've made a plan to spend this. You got to write the checks by in the next 10 weeks or whatever this thing is. So it's just a remarkable situation. But I do think South Dakota will really benefit from this package dramatically.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the cases are going up, and that hospital capacity is likely to be tested.
Yeah, Lori, that's a great question. If there would have been one thing I would have done differently yesterday, is said, okay, let's earmark $100 million toward prevention, or somehow getting these case counts down. A lot of this has to do with recovery and other such things. What kinds of things can we do for healthcare to either reduce the spread or to manage people better? And we've got money all sorts of money for this. That's one thing I would have done differently.
Yeah. From the beginning, contact tracing and testing, and rapid testing. In nursing homes, people not being able to see their loved ones. Well, if you deployed enough rapid testing, you could have visitation in some places if that was deployed effectively. That does seem like a swing and a miss.
Lori Walsh for governor.
No. I'd like to spend some more time with my family, so I won't be running anytime soon. Seth Tupper taught me how to say that. All right, John Hunter, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori.
John Schock, thanks as well to you.
Thanks for having me.